Thanks, Shane. Thank you very much.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Good afternoon on this Tuesday afternoon. How are you? 51551 for your text. You can send us emails to ray@rte.ie. Thanks so much to Brenda for sorting things out yesterday. It's a difficult thing the government have to do now, isn't it? As we found out, first time round, it's a lot easier going into lockdown than coming out of it. And of course, Christmas is looming, as if you need to be told. So they have to decide now what is going to happen over the next 6 weeks. It seems like it's going to be level three and then some sort of Christmas level three after that. And then will we suffer from that come January? Will we be back in a lockdown situation in January? It's a very difficult one. And of course, as we said before in this programme, you have scientists and they just go by the science. And then you have politicians. And every decision, despite scientific recommendations and scientific advice from NPHET, will be decided because of politics. And that skews things, doesn't it? And there's lobby groups here, there and everywhere. They're getting it in the ear from everybody. Everybody wants to be back in business. And it sounds to me, when you listen, that everybody feels they've been targeted, which, of course, is not the case. Nobody's been targeted. We're all doing this because we want to get out the other side with as little damage as possible. And we've done hugely well. We've done really well since March. And the figures would be a lot worse if we weren't as compliant as we have been. And we need to just keep a steady hand. Keep it going. Keep it going. Let's not lose it now. And I think the problem, and it's good news, that like the three vaccines is good news. I was reading an awful lot about vaccines over the weekend, how they're going to be administered, all the logistics involved there, who's going to get it first. But it's like when you can see the line and you get a bit giddy, and that's when you injure yourself. You know, in a marathon, you can the last mile and you think, I have loads into the tank. I'm going to speed it up now. And that's when you pull the hamstring or do whatever. So the announcement of the vaccines, we can all see the line now and we think, oh, yeah, it's just there. But it's not just there. It's like we're talking another 6 months. So we have to keep our heads, keep a steady hand. And we are still in this together and we need to do it for each other. Anyway, 51551, ray@rte.ie. The calendars keep coming in and thanks so much. We're heading towards the Charity Calendar of the Year Award. Yeah, forget about the National Book Awards tomorrow. This is the big award ceremony later on in the year. The Charity Calendar of the Year. Rehoming Cork Pets. Thank you very much. 100% of all money raised from this calendar will be used to help ill-treated or abused dogs. It's €5 and there are 12 beautiful pictures of beautiful dogs. There's Teddy there. Hi, Teddy. Oh, look at Miss Honey. Woo! With her big eyes, her big puppy eyes, puppy dog eyes. And they're all there. There's a dog for each month. There's Roxy. Oh, the boxer. And there's Milo. Don't know what breed he is. Looks mixed. Cooper's there as well. And they're all there posing and looking brilliant for Rehoming Cork Pets. And you'll be able to buy that locally for €5. St. Mary's of Angels are based down in Kerry. And they have a lovely calendar as well with loads of different scenes from... there's Killorglan Bridge there, and there's a red squirrel native to Tralee. It says red squirrel Tralee. Skellig Michael, picture there of Skellig Michael. There's female and male kingfisher. They're a beautiful looking bird, very photogenic. And St. Mary's of the Angels is home to about 70 people with physical and intellectual disabilities, ranging from moderate to profound. And the charity calendar is on sale around the area down there in Kerry. So well done to everybody involved there. And well done to Anna Bowles as well. She's an Irish artist. Scenes of Ireland 2021 calendar. And her calendar is on sale for €15. It's a bit more expensive because Anna is an artist and she has 12 original paintings there, all for South West Meath Hospice. So keep them coming in. We've a very large box upstairs where we're putting all the calendars in, and then we'll choose our charity calendar of the year before the end of the year. This is very cute. Niamh upstairs spotted this. It was a tweet from somebody. My 8-year-old in the car today, and the 8-year-old says, do you want me to throw the confetti in my pocket? Me? No, not in the car. Why do you have confetti in your pocket? The 8-year-old says, it's my emergency confetti. I carry it everywhere in case there's good news. Isn't that lovely? I love that. I just love that. That's brilliant. Gordon Ramsay is a chancer. No, he's not. I actually said that to him. I interviewed him years ago and I called him a chancer. He's opening up a new burger joint or burger restaurant. And you've probably heard this already, but the Wagyu burger, which is made out of that Wagyu beef, will cost you £80 sterling. £80 sterling for a burger. Ah, come on. Ah, come on. And you don't even get chips with it. If you want chips on the side, it's an extra £6. And if you can't stretch to the Wagyu burger for £80, a normal run-of-the-mill American burger will cost you £21. Of course, it'd be nice, wouldn't it? Be nice to be out in a burger restaurant, just sitting down with your mates, having the chats. The little things. It's the little things, I think, that people crave. It's not the big things. You know, we've gone from craving a two-week holiday in the sun to just getting out there into a restaurant, having a beer and a burger and chips and having the chats. It's just the little things. They're nearly banal, the things that we're looking forward to now. Because it's gone down. Our expectations have gone down. I see the Cambridge Dictionary word of the year is quarantine. That's no surprise. Editor said the quarantine was the third most looked up word overall this year and comes out on top if you discount words that recur most years like hello or dictionary. So quarantine is the one. It edged out other finalists. Pandemic was there. Lockdown was there, as you would expect. And there was a surge of searches for quarantine in the week of the 18th to the 24th of March when restrictions started to be imposed in many countries due to COVID-19. Quarantine, yeah. I see Elon Musk has overtaken Bill Gates to be the world's second richest person. So he's only second now to your man Bezos, who's head of Amazon. What's he worth? 127.9 billion. 127.9 billion he's worth. That's dollars. Yeah, so you'd have to, it wouldn't be as much euro, but you know. But how do you think and what do you do when you had that much money? How do you look at the world? You know, you look at Ireland and say, I might buy that. As somebody was saying this morning, you can only use one loo at a time, you know, so it doesn't matter how much money you have. You can only sleep in one bed, listen to one radio, look at one telly, use one loo. But how do you think? How does it affect your mentality? Well, nobody listening knows because nobody is worth over 100 billion. 100 billion. It seems sort of criminal, doesn't it, in a way? Oh, yeah, I should have mentioned that when I was talking about the burgers. Nevin Maguire will be with us today after 4 o'clock. And he's here to sort out all your Christmas cooking conundrums. All the C's there. Christmas cooking conundrums. So if you have any questions about your puddings or your Christmas cakes or your turkeys, a bit early for turkeys maybe, but you might be planning it and you might be ordering it from the butchers, so you may want to know what, you know, poundage you should be getting or kiloage. And today he's going to talk about gifts you can cook, which is a nice idea because it's very personal, isn't it? Like if you got a couple of truffles or a box of truffles that somebody had made themselves, you'd be very impressed. You may not eat them, but you'd be very impressed. I'm joking. Anyway, so if you have any questions for Nevin, 51551, ray@rte.ie. Yeah, we're getting to the ACDC in a moment. But first, I have to tell you about our quiz of today. I did miss this yesterday. Today is the 24th of November. And we have cobbled together 10 questions from the archives and the newspapers from over the decades and the centuries. All the big stories, scientific breakthroughs, pop songs, TV programmes, films, as they say down the country. In Kildare as well, yeah. And births and deaths. They're all there. We're looking for two people to answer 5 questions each. And we have a great prize this week. Fabulous day at the Riverlee Hotel in Cork. It's a Doyle Collection Hotel. One lucky listener, as in the person who wins, we'll get a 2-night stay with breakfast each morning and dinner on one evening with their award-winning bar and restaurant, The River Club. A stylish all-weather terrace and luxurious bedrooms all in the heart of Cork. Weekends have never looked better. Something to look forward to. You can find out more about the Riverlee Hotel at doylecollection.com. Doylecollection.com. And to be involved in our quiz of today, answer this qualifying question. Who will Tipperary play in the All-Ireland football semi-final? Who will Tipperary play in the All-Ireland football semi-final? They're still looking at each other, pinching themselves down in Tipperary. First time in 85 years. Did it really happen, Mick? Yes, it is, John. It did. Are we in the semi-final? We are. But who are we playing? 1850 715 900.
1850 715 900. And of course, you can't mention Tipperary without mentioning Cavan, so well done Cavan as well. Their wait wasn't as long. It was 98, wasn't it, the last time there, sometime around then. So we'll have two people on after 4 o'clock. AC/DC have a new album out, and a very funny man took to TikTok to explain to you how you can recreate an AC/DC song. He says it's very simple. Have a listen. 30 seconds. How to make an AC/DC song at home on your own.
Here's how to make an AC/DC track in 30 seconds.
First, you need drums.
Then you need bass.
Then you need guitar. All you need to know are three chords, A and G. Put them together in any order. And do your best impression of Marge Simpson.
What's that? Look out! Dog on the road!
That's funny. That's funny. Good afternoon, 51551 for texts.
It was one of those nights when you...
RT Radio 1. Arthur, enjoy that. Might be on your own there, Arthur. I enjoyed it as well. There's two of us, Arthur. I think Jamie enjoyed it outside. Dave enjoyed it as well. So there you go. 51551, ray@rte.ie. We had Karina on the quiz of today last week. And she's back on to ray@rte.ie. She said, what excitement today when our far and fished arrived with not one but two Ray Darcy Show treasured mugs. This is just what I needed on this miserable wet and windy day in Kilmacow. As you know, it's my birthday this week. Happy birthday, Karina. Which I'm really not looking forward to, as my lovely mammy Anne passed away a couple of months ago. And it all still feels quite raw. It was always on my bucket list to enter a radio competition. It wasn't on my bucket list to fail so dramatically. All I could imagine was my mother ringing me saying, oh, Karina, really? I can't believe you didn't get a single answer right. Which makes me smile. So I thought I would spread the joy of my stupidity once again with you all. A while back, my son Sam fell off his bike and fractured his arm and had an overnight stay in WUH. That's the Waterford University Hospital. My mother was recuperating in my home and I was quite concerned to get back to her. So I went up to the nurse's station and said the following. Please can you tell me when we are expected to be discharged, as my mother is at home recovering from a serious hangover. The nurses looked at me in shock. It was only then I realised what I meant to say, that my mother is at home recovering from a serious heart attack. I laughed, they didn't. Anyhow, I've learned if you can't laugh at yourself, there's no reason for laughing at anyone else. And this is how, this has become my mantra now. Thanks for having me on your show. Smile when you can. We always do, Karina. And PSU researchers Emily and Niamh rock. We know that already. That's from Karina there. Do you know what we watched over the weekend, which highly recommended for a bit of distraction and diversion? We Are the Champions. It's new to Netflix and it's one of those things that you might just flick past. Go, that's not for me. But what they've done is, I think it's 6 half-hour documentaries. They've gone around the world to all the oddball competitions. And they've made these beautifully engaging and warm half-hour documentaries where they interview the people and they follow them to a big competition. So, for example, there's frog jumping. Watch that. There's chili eating. There's fantasy hairstyling. There's yo-yoing. There's dog dancing. And the first one, which is absolutely brilliantly made, and it's just lovely because they're poking a little bit of fun at the people, but it's warm. So it's just really, really well done, really sensitively done. Anyway, did you know that in Brockworth in Gloucestershire, every year that they roll a wheel of cheese down Cooper's Hill? Now, Cooper's Hill is at more than a 45 degree angle, so very, very steep. And it's 100 metres from the top to the bottom. And people can cover that distance faster than Usain Bolt. So they do the half hour on that and they follow, the preparations of two or three of the participants. One girl is looking to make it 3 in a row or 4 in a row, whatever, I can't remember. But it's just beautifully made, beautifully voiced over. And it's just lovely. They're lovely documentaries. Perfect for what we're going through at the moment. We Are the Champions on Netflix. Highly recommend from here, and you can watch it this evening and give me a review tomorrow. They're only a half hour long. 51551 ray@rte.ie. Okay, some good news now. John Healy, who we know as the maitre d' from the TV show The Restaurant, has tied the knot And John is on the line to tell us more. How are you doing, John? Congratulations.
Better late than never, I suppose, Ray. Thanks very much. How
can
are you?
Can I tell them your age? Is that okay?
Yeah, sure, go on. Yeah. Everybody knows it now anyway.
Yeah, 55. 55.
55, yeah. There's hope for everybody, yes.
Yes, and when did you marry your van?
We got married, it'll be 2 weeks tomorrow.
Right.
Yeah.
And how did you meet?
We met online, actually, about 5 years ago.
Okay.
And he had just arrived in Ireland about a month previous to that. And we kind of hooked up over Christmas time. I'd been working and he'd been working. And we just clicked immediately, you know.
Yeah.
I went off to Australia in February that year, next year. And when I got back in March, we reconnected again. And he's still there. He hasn't ran.
Who proposed to who?
You know, it was kind of a complicated issue because of... I was actually quite ill and we were in Spain.
Right.
And I go through bouts of illness with the transplant and medication and stuff. So, and we were sitting there and I began to feel well at the end of the holiday. So I turned around and said to him, my God, I said, we really should do something about this, because if that hadn't happened to me, you'd have nothing.
Right.
And he turned to me and looked at me and went, I do.
And he wasn't saying I do have something, he was saying yes.
So we kind of then I suppose at that point we got engaged, and then we kind of freaked out. The pair was like, oh my God, am I ready for this? And he wasn't ready and I wasn't ready, and you know, it just kind of, you know, we were very comfortable with each other, and we are very comfortable with each other, and it was kind of the shock of the whole thing that we both wanted the same thing. And we came home and told family, and then my sort of like we got all nervous and we panicked when people started organizing things around us, and then I kind of stopped and I went, hang on, we're not ready yet, don't panic here. So we made a date for the year later, and then lockdown happened in March. So we were supposed to get married in October, and then we postponed it completely because we were going to bring his family over from Croatia, and logistically it was a whole thing going on around the wedding. And we decided that we cancelled that or postponed that, told his family that we were going to postpone everything. They knew anyway, told my family. And we both then decided that we wanted to get married this year.
Right.
So we organised it for 11-11-2020.
11-11-2020. And you're a stickler for detail. You know, you're meticulous. I've seen you in action.
Yeah.
So talk us through then what happened on the day. Where did you get married?
We got married in, where I work, of course.
Right.
Where else did I go?
Yes.
It's, you know, I wouldn't go anywhere else. I couldn't go anywhere else. So actually, I let the guys do it at work, and they pulled it together for me, in fairness to them. And we did it kind of almost very quickly because we were open. And closed and open and closed, and we were doing takeaways and deliveries and all that kind of stuff, and it was very messy. So I've got a great team in there in number 25 in Susie Street. So Mark and Stephen organized the wedding, and we did the menus together, and we did the running order together. I organized the registrar to come up from the HSE.
Yeah.
And we do it every day.
Yes, of course. So, Jovan is a chef.
And Jovan is a chef.
And you're a maitre d'.
And I'm a maitre d'.
So the standards are quite high. So I wouldn't like to be cooking for you two.
Well, they did a great job. In fairness, the team did a fantastic job, and everything was beautiful.
What you wear?
In number 25 for Fitzwilliam Place.
No, what you wear?
Oh,
not
what
wear.
I wear?
Yeah.
Oh, clothes. I wore a black velvet jacket and trousers and shoes, and he wore a purple velvet jacket with black trousers and shoes. And bow ties. So it was very classic and very nice, and it kind of suited the venue.
Yeah. Now, because you're a heart recipient, I'd imagine you have to be very careful around the whole COVID thing, do you?
Oh, yeah. Well, both my mother and myself are a high-risk group. I'm actually in Newlands at the moment, in Naas, getting my Christmas decorations and popping in to visit her.
Right.
but we had to be very careful. We did temperatures, and anybody who was coming, we had 20 for the wedding, so anybody who was coming to the wedding, I had spoken to beforehand, about a month beforehand, told them what we were going to do, made sure that everybody was okay and that we were all COVID-free, and made sure that it remained that way. And then we took temperatures and had did the usual social distancing and all that kind of stuff on the day as well. So it worked out really well.
I'm interested to know when you broached the subject of your heart with Jovan.
I think when he saw me taking medication, he goes, you like your tablets, don't you? And I was like, well, I kind of need these. And I sat him down and told him the whole story.
Right.
And, you know, it's part of my life. It's something that I live with every day. And he needed to know everything. So, you know, there's a lot of trust between us. And I think that was the basis of our relationship anyway. It was the openness and trust.
And any puns in the speeches about your heart and giving your heart?
No, but I did have a candle lit on the mantelpiece of the fireplace for my donor and for Dad. So, you know, and I referred to that in my speech. It was like, you know, I wouldn't be here unless, you know, my donor didn't give me their heart, you know. And I I'm constantly vigilant of that as well. And I remember it every day.
Yeah.
You know, it's something that never leaves you, Ray, you know.
No, you're sure. When you wake up in the morning and you feel your heart beating in your chest, I'd imagine it's a reminder.
Part of your life. Yeah. Still, I'm so grateful, you know. Yeah. It's 8 years now since I got my transplant. So, you know, and I did stop talking about it on media, on radio a while ago, because I needed to move on with my life and I needed to go back to work and all that kind of stuff. But it's come back around again at me at this time when we're going through stuff like this.
Yes, yeah.
You know,
yeah,
and we're going through COVID. You're very aware of what's happening around you, and you're very aware of where you are the whole time, and you're very aware of how vulnerable you are.
And are you getting any hints as to what's going to happen now in the announcements over the coming days?
Only what you're getting from the media and stuff, the stuff being leaked out. I think they're preparing us psychologically not to open next week, restaurants. That there's now rumours that they're going to leave us closed for another week and we reopen the following week, which is, you know, we need to be very careful, and I realise all that. But, you know.
But it's a tough question, John, though. But can you see people gathering in restaurants in the lead up to Christmas and being responsible? Can you?
Absolutely. Yeah. But not massive parties. It'll be like it was in July and August and September. It'll be small tables, the largest table is 6. You know, outdoor dining, we only had 15. So I think they'll allow it happen, but we're going to have to be very guarded and very careful. There'll be no big parties, and there's no 20s or 12s or 14s. It'll all be small tables.
And there'll be no staying on to drink extra bottles of wine.
And there'll be no staying on to drink until 1:30 in the morning.
No, I think
we'll have to be closed and gone by 11:30, midnight kind of thing.
Yes, yeah.
Okay. You know, and it's just the Christmas that we're going to have this year, I think, and we all have to accept that.
Yeah, and you know, next Christmas we'll be back to some sort of normality, you know.
Absolutely.
Listen, you sound in great form. Congratulations again.
Thanks, Ray. Yeah, thank you very
much. Thanks for taking our call.
I will, no problem.
See you, John.
Thank you.
Bye.
Happy Christmas.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Happy Christmas. Bye.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Siobhan enjoyed John's book and hoping he'll write another one. And Mary has been on. She says, would like to add my congratulations to John Healy. We had my husband and his twin sister's 70th birthday in Susie Street, and John was so good, nice and funny. All the family still talk about it. So glad happiness is in the air for him, says Mary. Now, a recent report drawn up by the former Secretary General of the European Commission, Dr. Catherine Day, has recommended a number of changes to Ireland's asylum seeker system. Among them is the introduction of vulnerability assessments, which would detect people who have been tortured in their home countries. Spirazi is the sole dedicated service for victims of torture who come to Ireland. It's estimated that just 10% of people who have suffered torture and arrive in Ireland access their services. And we find out about Spirazi when we spoke to Claire Dunn, who's a teacher, or not a teacher, a doctor. And she's working in a refugee camp, and she told us that she used to work with Spirazi. I'd never heard of it before. We're joined on the line now by Chief Executive of Spirazi, Rory Halpin. How are you doing, Rory?
How you doing, Ray?
Good to talk to you. And Cheribu.
Great to talk to you this afternoon.
Cheribu, who's originally from Uganda and came here 20 years ago and has used Spirazi's services. How are you doing, Cheribu?
I'm okay. Thanks.
Thank you both for joining us today. I suppose I'll go to you, Rory, first. There's a slight delay on your line, so we'll try and deal with that. Just tell us about Spirazi, how it came about, and what its mission statement is, I suppose.
Yeah, sure, Ray. And thanks for this opportunity. Spirazi was founded in 1999. I don't know if you remember that there was an initial influx of many asylum seekers at that stage into the country. If you look back at the figures, I was just checking it there, in 1993, something like 36 people arrived into the country. But by 1998, 1999, that number had risen to about 4,000 or 5,000. So everybody was kind of scrambling to kind of deal with this influx, including government and non-government agencies. So the Spiritans, who founded Spirazi, they did their own bit of thinking about it and decided, well, maybe we'll offer initially a kind of a place of welcome, which they did on, and which is our place where we work for 200 North Circular Road. And then, because of their interest in education, the Spiritans said, well, okay, well, why don't we offer English language classes? Because that seems to be an obvious help for people coming into the country who don't speak the language. But the interesting thing is, when they began the classes, they realized that many of the students were just incapable of taking on board what was being taught. And that on closer examination, they realized that people had been, some of the people anyway in the class, had been severely traumatized and in fact were victims of torture. So that kind of shifted, the response shifted as a result of that. While hanging on to the English language piece, they began to look at, well, how can we respond to this, tragedy that's kind of in front of our very eyes here? And move very quickly then to providing medical support through doctors and therapists and eventually psychosocial support. And I suppose that kind of mirrored the understanding of torture and how deeply impactful it was on the person, you know, that every aspect of the person is affected by torture. And so a holistic approach was what was required, you know, to deal with the physical, the psychological, the social, and indeed the spiritual, that, you know, those kind of wider questions of what the meaning of life is around. So everything is affected by this torture. Okay. So over the period of, I suppose, 20, 21 years now, we have seen over 5,000 victims of torture. And that's where we are today.
Cherubu is one of them. Cherubu, so yeah. 20 years ago, you arrived in Ireland. Why did you pick Ireland?
I actually didn't pick Ireland. It's some of my friends I used to work with who picked for me Ireland.
Okay. And did you know anything about Ireland?
I knew what I had been taught at school, like geographically and historically.
Right.
And then because I was a Catholic, so I knew Ireland was a Catholic country.
Hmm. In talking to people who come here as asylum seekers, I'm always interested to know how bad things were at home to make them flee their country and leave their loved ones behind. So you lost your husband. How did he die?
My husband was shot, actually, in front of all of us.
Right.
And that kind of, like, put me in a very kind of tight position.
Yeah. And when you say, when you say in front of all of us, that all of you, the family.
My family.
Yes. How many children have you got, Cherubu?
I have 6 children.
Right. Okay.
4 boys and 2 girls.
So that's a horrific thing to happen if you're a child, to see your father shot dead, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, and it's very traumatic. Like, I couldn't believe it, like, myself.
Yes, yes.
Like, when you think back, it was terrible to watch something like that, especially with your children.
Yes, and why was he murdered?
His family had been involved in the politics of Uganda.
Hmm.
And when that government was taken off, so the family that is there is kind of targeted. You are deemed to be helping those who are opposed to the government,
yes,
even though you are not. But just the mere fact that you had been, some of your relatives and been like in government holding big jobs.
Yes.
Those who stayed back were supposed to, like, they were kind of deemed
to be opposing the government.
And
I suppose because you were then married to your husband, the same could be said of you. You were seen as opposing the government as well.
Yeah, and I was working with a British company, so I was kind of deemed connected to the international organizations.
So did you fear for your own life, Cherubu?
So things like that, like you are one of the people, even though you didn't do anything, like you are supposed to kind of be mobilizing people against the government.
Hmm. Can you tell me when it came to the point where you knew you had to leave?
I had been asked like to go and report for questioning a few times. And my office mates kind of thought it was dangerous. And they kind of talked to me that it would probably be better for you to leave. So the children have one parent alive.
Mm.
You have lost your husband already, just for the sake of your children. Because it was hard for me. My children were young then. Like, just to leave them there was hard as a mother. Like,
of course, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And did they ever bring you in for questioning, Cheribou?
They brought me a few times. And there, when they mean questioning, this kind of torture.
Right.
Because they have to make you talk. And as you know, women, the only way to make a woman talk is to break her spiritually by maybe rape and all that. So that's the only thing that will make you feel bad about yourself. Lower your self-esteem. And maybe, like, because if they threaten your family or your children, you are going to talk.
Yes.
That's how they break your spirit.
So how long did these bouts of questioning last for you?
It depends on who is really handling you. We have in Uganda what they called safe houses. Safe houses means underground torture chambers.
Right.
So if you are taken there, your family will not know where you are. Because most of the time you are taken there blindfolded. And it's like homes, like they have prepared for this kind of questioning. The fact that you are isolated, even if you shouted, nobody will hear you. Or sometimes you are in the basement.
Horrific. And it's ongoing. I was just reading there that 45 people were killed in Uganda last week.
You make noise.
Yes, and that's fine. That's fine.
So those safe houses is where so many people are tortured.
Yes.
And killed.
So when you arrived to Ireland, this was, you know, this had affected you. So you were suffering probably from PTSD, post-traumatic stress, having witnessed your husband been killed a number of years previously, have been brought in for questioning and all that. So how was it affecting your mental health?
Mm. When I came here, the separation from your children and your family and the world you knew, it is kind of like a grief.
Yes.
So isolation here triggered depression in me because I eventually realized that I was really alone and it felt like you had died. You know, like the way you can sometimes have those dreams that you are in heaven and you are looking down on your family and seeing how they are suffering. It was that kind of effect that I was here safe, but my children, I didn't know what was going on with them there. Because when you call home, people try to, like, so that you are not worried, they say everything is okay. But when you call the children, you can tell that they are afraid to say things. They had probably been warned not to worry you.
Yes.
But as a mother, you can sense fear in them that they cannot talk.
Mm.
You know? So that is very hard.
Yes. And
so I think that is what triggered depression in me and brought up all the trauma I had been, because in Uganda there's no counseling services, despite all these traumatic situations there. You don't get help, like to talk to somebody, or you have to deal with that yourself. And me being the head of the family, I had to be strong for everybody. I never really had the time to grieve.
No. Very difficult. And I believe you went silent. You didn't talk to anybody.
Yeah, like after my husband was killed, after the burial, like when I realized he was really dead, I could not talk, like for a year. I was just walking.
Yeah. Rory, I'll bring you back in now. Is Rory there?
Sure, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah. To the children, maybe.
Yeah. I'm just going to talk to Rory for a minute, Cheribou.
So it was, I don't know what happened to me.
Yeah.
Like to silence me. It just came automatically by itself.
No, but that'd be a symptom.
Like that I could not talk.
That'd be a symptom of post-traumatic stress, wouldn't it, Rory?
Exactly, Ray. Yeah. Yeah. What Cherubu is describing there, flashbacks, insomnia, nightmares, depression, anxiety. I mean, and that just, it's that way, that's the body's way of dealing with the trauma or not, as the case may be. So, yeah, perfectly describing very graphically and movingly what happened to her over in Uganda 20 years ago now. Yeah. Mm.
So I just said in the intro that just 10% of people who have suffered torture and arrive in Ireland access their services. So what numbers are we talking about? 10% of what?
Okay, well, yeah, 10% of, well, I mean, just looking at the figures last year, there was over 3,500 people came into the country last year. So that's approximately 350 people that we would have seen out of that group last year. Not even that, in fact, I was checking the figures, that we didn't even see that number of people. But it's still a huge number of people being referred in for trauma therapy, for being victims of torture. And that's it's a kind of a bit of a tragedy in itself. And that's why when you mentioned that there should be a vulnerability assessment right at the start, that's what we've been advocating for many years now. What the government has committed itself to, but still hasn't managed to put in place. But we are hopeful that it will happen soon. But that will identify particularly, well, a whole range of vulnerabilities, but particularly victims of torture. And yeah. So that the sooner people are identified, the sooner they can get the
treatment,
the supports they need. Yeah. Exactly.
Cherubu, four of your family are now living in Ireland.
No, four of my children are living here, but my first two are in Uganda.
Okay. And you must fear for them, because as I was saying, there's unrest ongoing. Bobby Wine, who is a presidential candidate, was arrested and people took to the streets to protest last week and 45 people were killed.
Yeah, there is like a worry, because my daughter, like on the day that Bobby Wine was arrested and people rioting, her house, because she deals with kind of human rights there as well, so she would be vocal.
Yes.
Yeah, like advocating for women's rights and all that. So they know where she lives.
And what happened to her?
A tear gas canister was thrown into her house. And there are young children there. The youngest is only 3 years.
Right.
Yeah.
And how
so
are
when
you,
things like that.
Yeah, that's worrying. How are you, Cherubu, now? It's 20 years on. You're in Ireland. How are you? How is your day-to-day life?
It's okay. Like when you come here, like you try to give back to the society that helped you.
Mm.
That's what I'm trying, because Piracy really helped me. All the therapy I got, they kind of helped me to recover. So I'm trying like to give back to them and help them create awareness of their service, because they do help. And there are so many people who haven't got this service. So we are trying to make it known to the people that we need help. There are so many people waiting. The waiting list is very long.
Yes. Spirazi, Spirasi, if people want to help, Spirazi, if you put that into Google. And Cherubu, you and some of your friends have found solace in dance.
Talk
to me about, you found help in dancing.
Yeah, we did find solace in dancing, because after I was like in Spirasi for 2.5 years counseling.
Mm.
But the list was growing like long and like people are waiting. So Spirasi said they had to face us out. But we were kind of frightened to go out and go where and what support and all that. Then they asked us to come with something that could help us. And we thought of various things. Then I suggested dance. Because in dancing, we can talk with our bodies. Like in contemporary dancing, you don't have to tell your story to anybody to relieve the trauma. So we used to tell our stories through our dancing, like our bodies move, the movements.
Yeah.
So that's helped us. Initially, we were 15 people who started it in 2003. And we were all from different countries like Iran, Iraq, all those areas that people were tortured and the wars had affected people. And we are still like going with that group up to now through the Irish Modern Dance Theatre.
Great. When all this is over, Cherubu, you might come in and we'll have a longer chat about your story.
Yeah.
I'd love to meet you in person.
Thank you.
Thanks for taking time out to talk to us today. Cherubu and Rory Halpin, Chief Executive of Spirasi, S-P-I-R-A-S-I. Thank you for taking time out to talk to us today as well. Thanks, Rory. Thanks, Cherubu.
Thanks. Thanks,
Thank
Ray.
You very much.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Spirasi, S-P-I-R-A-S-I, if you want to donate to that group who are doing amazing work with asylum seekers in this country. Now, Finding Jack Charlton is a brilliant new documentary about Jack Charlton, and it's there is never seen before footage in it of Jack at home in his final years. And on the line we have Gabriel Clark, who's the director of Finding Jack Charlton. How are you doing, Gabriel?
I'm fine. How are you, Ray?
Good. Congratulations on the documentary, because we see a side of Jack Charlton that we've never seen before, and it's quite sad. You were there in his house witnessing this great man who'd been a brilliant footballer, a brilliant manager in the final years of his life, suffering from dementia. What was that like for you?
Yes, it is sad. It's poignant and it's authentic. And it was a privilege to be able to film with Jack and his wife, Pat, and the family. But I also hope that those scenes in the film are inspirational, because I did certainly feel a sense of an inspirational figure in Jack, which you'd always felt. I'd always felt watching him, the manager, and knowing him a little bit in my time as a journalist too, when you were around him, because, you know, he pretty much still looked the same, this tall, proud figure still. And he was doing an awful lot throughout the filming that we did with him in the last 18 months of his life that would have been a normal thing for a grandfather to do, a proud grandfather, out with his grandchildren, going to the pub, having a drink. He was still living his life. And I think that's one of the important things that you need to underline with dementia, is that it isn't an end to your life. You can still live on with it. And in many ways, I think it's hardest on those around the person who's living with the dementia, because they're the ones who are seeing the change. And maybe that's what also resonates when you watch it too.
Yeah. And there's that lovely moment at the end. I'm not, but it's just that.
No, I don't give it away.
Yeah, no, I'm not. But it brought me to tears. I'm not going to give it away. But we have a sound clip here. Just you were showing him. He was having dinner with his family, his grandchildren, his wife Pat, and his son John, and you were showing him a clip of him when he presented one of the programs. I think it was about castles or something like that. So he's watching it with his family. There's just a bit of audio here.
That's me.
Yes.
Yeah. You probably preferred that to freezing to death of here, because this is one of the draftiest hills I've ever been in. That's me. Mm-hmm. I don't even know me doing it.
I don't even know me doing it. You have a great lineup in it. Roddy Doyle, Eamon Dunphy, Bertie Ahern, Larry Mullen from U2, Paul McGrath tells his own story. And of course, a big part of that is how Jack became nearly a father figure to him. There's that footage. Will you tell us a little bit about that footage where he's doing he's public speaking. I don't know if it's at a wedding or is a dinner dance or what is it. But he's Jack Charlton at his very funniest best.
Yeah, that footage. I mean, we're so glad that we found it, because I'd heard it's out in Donegal, actually, at a club in Donegal, and we found it quite late in the editing process, because, you know, you hear so many wonderful tales of Jack Charlton, the after dinner speaker and the performer, as you say, at his very best when he's telling jokes, when he's holding a crowd. And that was one thing, obviously, that enabled him to connect so well with people. But I think especially in Ireland, because of this hugely authentic nature, this natural performer. Hmm. And he was so good at it and so warm and funny. But you hear so many tales, but, you know, long before the days of camera phones and even video cameras, there's so little footage. But we got this footage, and I was so pleased that we got it, along with some other footage in the film that's unseen before, behind the scenes with the camp in 1990. And in 88, there are bits as well. And I'm really, really hope that for the viewers who are going to watch this, even if they know the Ireland football story inside out, they're going to be taken inside the camp. And taken inside the sort of life of Jack at that time like never before, because we've proof with this unseen footage that that's the way it was.
Yeah.
You know, we're on the bus with the team as they come back from the airport. They come into the airport from the game in Belfast. We're on the bus with the team as they go to games. So you're getting a real sense that the crack, as they talked about, was
existed,
true,
it was real. And Gabriel, tell us about the notes as well. We haven't seen them before.
Oh, no, the notes were so important for us to get, and I'm glad you mentioned them, because Jack made these notes throughout his managerial career, largely on the back of menus, on the back of notepads, tiny little pieces of paper, but he kept them all. And this sense, I think, that he was, you know, again, there's this simplification, I think, of Jack the man and Jack the manager into something a bit agricultural and a bit sort of, a bit of a sort of...
Put him under pressure. Put him under pressure.
Yeah, put him under pressure. But you, with the notes, give you a sense of the thought process that went into those tactics.
Yeah.
How those tactics enabled Ireland to beat the very best. The managerial philosophy behind the team spirit, the way in which he thought about getting the best out of the players in man management terms, what he thought about in terms of his own approach to management, be a dictator, but be a nice one. I mean, it's a line of genius when you think about
it. Yes, benign dictator,
Yeah.
A lot of situations call for a benign dictator, as it happens.
Yeah, you know, exactly, but he's written it down, and people get paid thousands for offering that sort of information at you know, leadership conferences today. And there it is on a small piece of paper at the bottom of a pile of notes.
Yeah. Where can people see it? Finding Jack Charlton. It's a feature-length documentary directed by Gabriel Clark, who we're talking to now. Where can they see it, Gabriel?
Well, it's going to be released on DVD digital download. So, you know, iTunes, your Amazon, Sky, you can download it there. But then in Ireland, the cinema release is going to go ahead once lockdown is lifted there, which hopefully, being well, will be December 2nd.
Okay.
So it's going to have a very comprehensive cinema release. So I really would encourage you, if you can, to go to the cinema and watch it.
Watch it. And Gabriel, an Irish audience will be chuffed. Although directed by an Englishman, it's very obvious where Jack Charlton's heart lay.
Absolutely right. How many people get made an honorary Irish citizen if they're English?
Yes,
small club.
Yeah. Gabriel Clark, thanks so much. Well done again. Finding Jack Charlton is available to watch in all the places that Gabriel has outlined. Thanks, Gabriel.
Thank you, Ray.
Good morning. Thank you very much. 51551 or RaidRT.ie. A couple of texts there on Rory and Cherubu. We need to realise how lucky we are to live in a democracy like Ireland. When you hear that woman's story, we should not take it for granted. And that's the big thing. When you speak to asylum seekers, they say peace over and over again. And we give out about this country, and sometimes we should be giving out about it, but we have to appreciate what we have. Thanks for highlighting this important issue regarding asylum seekers and the travails they may have gone through previous to their arrival on our shores, says that person. Now, press the button there. That's the one. Yes, yes. It's time for our quiz of today. Today being the 24th of November, just in case you don't know. Tomorrow, a month to Christmas. Big day. Big day in our house. Birthday. This week, great prize. It's a two-night stay in the River Lee Hotel in Cork, which is a Doyle Collection hotel. Two-night stay, as I say, with breakfast each morning and dinner on one evening with their award-winning bar and restaurant, The River Club. There's a stylish all-weather terrace and luxurious bedrooms all in the heart of Cork. Weekends have never looked better. Something to look forward to. DoyleCollection.com for more details. Sheila Ryan, how are you doing, Sheila?
I'm great, Ray. Thank you.
You're in Clonmel.
Yes.
In a jubilant and ecstatic Tipperary.
Well, delighted with the win, yes.
Yeah, but you're a Waterford supporter.
Yeah.
By the way, you moved, did you, from?
No, well, a couple of miles outside the town. Clonmel is right on the border.
Aha, so you're actually in Waterford, are you?
Well, I'm not technically. I'm in Clonmel, but you know.
Okay.
I'm in Tipperary. Yeah, I'm on the Tipperary side.
Right. What's your story? You were at work today. You finished at what time?
2 o'clock.
Right. Can you tell us what you do?
I work in the Apple Green, the Dungarvan Road.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah. Good stuff. Yeah. Is it busy or less busy, or what's the story?
We've been very quiet because we had roadworks on the road in February.
I see.
So, yeah. We've been quiet.
So that affects you, yeah.
Yeah.
And who's at home? Who's in the family?
Oh, well, there's only my husband here with me now.
Right. And what
children
about...
Children are all gone.
Are they? Right. Have you got grandchildren?
Yeah, 10.
10?
10.
Wow. And are they all living locally or abroad or where?
Yeah, they're close enough, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Waterford or Tipperary supporters?
Well, I have Kilkenny, Waterford and Tipperary.
That's fun. Fun times.
Yeah.
So what do you think is going to happen at Christmas with all your children and your grandchildren?
Well, we'd be quite enough anyway at Christmas. You know, there's two of the families now quite near me, which I see regularly. So they're, you know.
Yes.
You know, but they're
talking about extending it to maybe two or three families, aren't they? In one household, yeah.
Well, they would be in and out anyway because we'd mind them at times. So, you know, they would be in and out anyway. They're part of our
bubble.
You know,
you're part of your bubble.
Yeah,
great. Okay, you're up against Larry Glancy from Ballymore Eustace in County Kildare.
Yeah, that's me.
How are you, Larry? We used to call it Ballymore Useless when we were in Kildare. Ballymore
Well,
Useless.
You couldn't anymore because we have two handball world champions in Ballymore Useless
Whoa!
Now.
Whoa! Not so
Matt
useless
Purcell
there.
Matt Purcell and Tommy O'Rourke.
Are they? Right.
Yeah.
Matt Purcell and Tommy O'Rourke.
Yeah, and we've a couple from Dunlavin that play for the club as well, and they are well up in the world champions as well.
Yeah, so it's a hotbed of handballing talent.
It is.
Why is that? Are there a number of handball alleys in the area?
There's two handball alleys in Ballymore Eustace.
That's it, you see. And then people see other people being successful and they say, I'll have a go at that.
Yeah, and there's an outdoor alley, an open air alley, because you can't leave the other alley's open anymore, like you did in the old day.
Right. So there's an open one. People can practice there. Did you ever...
And we're near the home of the hurlers from Nace.
Did you ever play handball yourself?
Yes, oh, gotcha. Sure, anyone that... See, you have to pass the school... You have to pass the handball alley to go to the school.
Everyone
over the bridge
did.
And
yes.
Into the school.
That explains the success. So people just naturally took to it. They didn't have to be asked to do it. Yeah.
Sure, nothing else to do.
You said that, now I didn't say it. They'll be given it. How are you with the family? Have you got grandchildren nearby?
Yeah, I have two grandchildren who live down the road, about 100 yards at the bridge. And they're up here now when they heard I was going on to talk to you.
Right, great. Hello, grandchildren.
They like the old show on a Sunday evening.
Oh, do they? Yeah, the bit of madness. It's chaos.
Yeah, it takes a while to calm them down then.
I'm the same.
I said that to my wife the other night. God, I wonder what does that poor man do when they...
Yeah.
And I have a couple of grandchildren in Chicago as well.
Right, okay. You're getting told what to say now.
Yeah.
Is that new for you? There's the dog as well. They're all getting in on the act. So you're a busy time of the year for you, Larry. You make holly wreaths.
Yes, I'm a holly wreath vendor, I like to call myself.
Excuse me, yes. So
I'm making them for the last 40 years.
Oh, brilliant. How much would a holly wreath cost you now?
I suppose it'll cost you a tenner.
That's right. And you don't have to tell me how much it costs you. I didn't mean that. You don't have to tell me that.
Yeah, I wouldn't slip that information out.
How many would you sell in a year?
I'd sell a good few at Christmas.
I see that. You're a cute
one. They're no good in the January
sales.
No, they're not.
Okay. Right, so Sheila Ryan plays Larry Glancy. Sheila's from Clonmel. Larry's from Ballymore Eustace. Good luck to you both.
Good luck, Sheila.
Yeah.
Good luck, Larry.
Look, five questions each. I need the answers as quickly as possible. And let's get going. Okay, Sheila, first question for you. Here we go. On this day in 2015, Venezuelan opposition leader Luis Diaz was shot days before the country's general election. On what continent is Venezuela?
South America.
Is the correct answer. Larry, on this day in 1979, the US admitted that troops in Vietnam were exposed to Agent Orange. On what continent is Vietnam?
Asia.
It's the correct answer. Good start. Sheila, audio one for you. Have a listen to this.
I don't think I'm old. I don't feel old. But I've noticed certain distinctive changes coming over me recently. My hair's changing colour. I've got the winter plumage on now. My nose hair is accelerating for reasons best known to itself.
So, Sheila, this day in 1942, that Scottish comedian and actor was born. Can you name him?
Billy Connolly.
Yes, and we say a happy 78th birthday to Billy Connolly. Yes, she's... for you, Larry, another audio one. Have a listen.
I think it's beautiful.
It's almost perfect.
Almost.
Yes, give it more rock and roll.
Well, I'm always up for that.
Put your body into it.
Right, OK. Put my body into it. I got it.
Not like that.
No, I got it. A bit more soul.
A bit more heart.
OK, that was a clip from the 2018 film Bohemian Rhapsody. Can you name the lead singer of Queen, who on this day in 1991 died at the age of 45?
Freddie. Freddie Mercury.
Is the correct answer. Well done.
Yeah, someone only played a song from on the radio this morning.
Yeah, well, that obviously because it's the anniversary of his death, you know, sad.
Yeah.
45, what a waste of talent. And this day in 1434, Sheila, the river which runs through... On this day in 1434, the river which runs through London froze over. Can you name the river?
Thames.
Is the correct answer. Larry, on this day in 1759, a destructive eruption of Mount Vesuvius took place. In which European country is Vesuvius?
I go for Italy.
Yes, you're right. It's near Naples. 3-3. Question number 4, Sheila. It's an audio one. Here we go. Baby. That song was number one on this day in 1985. Can you name the group?
Wham.
Yes. Understated but very good. That's how I'm going to describe you, Sheila. Larry.
Cheers.
Audio one for you. Here we go. Like a super trooper, lights are gonna find me shining like the sun. Number one, and it was number one on this day in 1980. Can you name the group?
The Great Abba.
The Great Abba is correct. It's 4-4. It's down to the wire. Sheila and Clamel, Larry and Kildare. Sheila, your final question. Good luck with this. What took place in Ireland on this day in 1982? So 24th November 1982. Was it a nationwide teacher strike, a general election, or a nationwide electricity blackout?
A general election.
Is correct. It was the second one of that year. The first one was in February. It's a clean sheet for Sheila.
I'm up against it.
Yes, and the pressure's on. Larry Glancy from Ballymore Eustace in Kildare. Here it is to bring us to a tie-break situation. If you get this right, Larry, good luck. On this day in 1965, the government imposed an experimental speed limit on Irish motorways. 1965. What was the speed limit? Was it 70 miles an hour, 80 miles an hour, or 90 miles an hour?
I go for 70.
Oh, you nearly said 70 is the correct answer. 70 is the correct answer. You nearly went for 80 there, Larry. And you changed your mind mid-word. So 5-5. Well done to you both. So we're into a tie-break situation. This is a guess.
Oh, they're divils, isn't it?
Yeah. They are. These are. Yeah, they're divils is right. Good description for it. So, so whoever guesses closest to the correct answer is the winner. I'll ask you the question, Sheila. If I have your answer as quickly as possible, and then Larry as quick after that as you can. So on this day in 1970, Dave Edmunds was at number one with "I Hear You Knocking." According to Spotify, how long in minutes and seconds is that song, "I Hear You Knocking"? Sheila?
3 minutes, 5 seconds.
You say 3 minutes and 5 seconds. Larry?
I go for 2 minutes, 50 seconds.
2 minutes, 50 seconds?
Yeah.
Well, you know what it is, Larry?
What?
You're very good at this. It's you're only 3 seconds off. It's 2 minutes and 47 seconds is the correct answer. Sorry about that, Sheila, because you did so well. On a different day, if you weren't up against somebody like Larry, you would have won and got the prize. Yeah. But you know you met your match there,
she
and Larry.
Great.
Yeah, well, both of you were very good.
Congratulations, Larry.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Hard luck.
Sheila, we're going to send you out a Ray Darcy Show mug.
I was hoping it wouldn't come down to the guest one.
Yes, I know. It's sort of cruel, isn't it? It's a cruel way to lose. Yeah, it's like penalties. Anyway, great talking to you, Sheila. Mind yourself and the family. Okay, see
you.
Bye.
Very much.
Bye. Bye.
Bye.
Larry Glancy, you're off to the River Lee Hotel in Cork.
Lovely.
Nice. Yeah. Great talking to you, Larry. Good luck with
thanks
the reads.
Thanks very much, Ray.
Have a good Christmas.
Keep up the good work.
Yeah, thank you. See you. Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Every Tuesday this time up until Christmas, we're in the company of Chef Nevin Maguire. How are you doing, Nevin?
How are you, Ray? Are you good?
I'm good.
Good. I have a bone to pick with you. Do you know that? No. Just that you know where I do live, in Cavan, not in Glasnevin. You know that?
Yes, I do. Just for people who weren't watching The Den on Sunday, Nevin was part of our clue in our quiz. Oh. So that the answer was Glasnevin. So there was a glass, and then there was... How many pictures in total of you? A lot of pictures of you.
Yeah. It was scary. I haven't slept since. It was kind of like a nightmare. My son was looking at it and saying, Jeannie, how many Nevins is there? So it was good fun. It's funny.
Sinead's great. Okay, so we're going to talk about foodie gifts, but we've a number of people who have questions for you. So I think we'll go to them first, maybe.
Perfect, yeah.
Siobhan Ward is on the line from Blessington and Wicklow. How are you doing, Siobhan?
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Hello, Siobhan.
Hello, Nevin, how are you?
now, this is a cooking conundrum that I'd say a lot of people around the country have. What is it, Siobhan?
It's trying to cook a Christmas cake or Christmas pudding or ice them because with a nut allergy, because you can't use marzipan and any of my traditional Christmas cake and Christmas pudding recipes that I would have all have almonds and ground almonds in them.
Wow, that's a tricky one there, Ray.
Yeah, just to get you going.
I have a big one coming up because my niece, who unfortunately didn't get married this year, is getting married next year, and I'm making the wedding cake. And most traditional wedding cakes would have almonds.
Yeah.
Yeah, they would.
It's a new thing to me. It's only the last couple of years I developed this allergy, which is absolutely crazy, but it happened. And I can't even have them in the house. So, you know, my traditional Christmas pudding that I've been making for God knows how long, and the recipe, I think, is about 50 years old. It's one of those old recipes that they used to make with the cloth and everything. But I haven't been able to make it the last couple of years.
Right. What do you think, Nevin?
Well, that's a really tricky one because, I mean, like, you know, the nuts is such a big part of it, and obviously she has such a severe allergy. Yeah. Yeah, that's a really tricky. I'll have to do a bit of research. If I take your details, I'm not pawning you off, but you've caught me on the spot.
In fairness, Nevin, it's important that you get this right, isn't it? So
absolutely.
Siobhan, Nevin is very good at this sort of thing, so we'll pass on your details to him with your permission, and he'll definitely get on to you in the coming weeks.
Yeah, regards to pudding, I wouldn't be worried. You could just leave out the almonds. Like, I mean, like, it's mainly fruit, and you'll be fine with that. It's the cake and the marzipan. If you want that, that's going to be a real kind of struggle with the ground almonds and that, especially if you're making your own marzipan. So I'll have to do a bit of research now, get my bacon cap on me and see can I make some inquiries for you. But I will try and help you out, Siobhan. I'll take your details and get back to you.
I did actually try a few places last year, sent out emails, but I never got any answers. So I really would.
Well, you didn't send them to me now.
And Siobhan, Siobhan, can I ask you, so this is only, your nut allergy has only developed in the last few years?
Yeah. And have you been to... 9 years of age, and
right.
2 years ago.
Okay.
I was eating nuts, I'd say, most days in granola for breakfast and everything, and then one day I had a nut and I couldn't breathe. And
right. That's, I wonder how common
that
is.
I had.
Yeah, that's unusual.
Yeah, I don't know how common it is.
Okay. Yeah, Siobhan, Nevin will be back on to you, and he's a very kind man. So just for getting on today, he's sending you out a copy of his Christmas cookbook. Isn't that nice?
Oh, great.
There you go.
That's
there you go.
Siobhan. Keep away from the nuts.
Now, I hope you can answer Mary's question, Nevin. We should have probably passed them by before you went on air. Mary Carr is in Cashland, Tipperary. How are you doing, Mary?
Hello, Ray. I'm doing very well, thank you.
How are the socially distanced celebrations going in Tipperary?
They are great, as far as I know. We are cocooning in our own little place here in Cashel.
Yeah, but
so we don't see the outside world too much.
Okay. So you're
I'm sure at a later date they'll make up for it.
Yeah, of course you will. What's your question for Nevin?
My question now is a very, very pressing one. I love tiramisu, but I hate cheese. So when I'm eating out, I'm poking the cheese out of the tiramisu.
Right.
And when I make it myself, I put in the extra light Philadelphia. Now, my question is, Nevin makes beautiful trifle with gorgeous custard. Could I make my own version of tiramisu, call it Tipperary version or whatever, and put in Nevin's custard instead of the mascarpone?
Right.
You could, Mary, because...
but that's past.
Because some of my family aren't big lovers of cheese either, so you could make a regular nice custard, and I mean, you can get some lovely, ready, fresh-made custards, grate some white chocolate into it, even a splash of a lovely cream liqueur made in Cavan called Cool Swan, and that would work really, really well. Good woman.
Yes?
Mary, you're a woman after my own heart, fair play to you.
Okay.
But Mary, what you could do is then just make up the custard, and this is a dessert that can be made ahead. The proper name for tiramisu, it's made with mascarpone, is called Pick Me Up, so it's one of my favourite desserts, but obviously if you don't like cheese, and in fairness, mascarpone is not a very strong cheese, but
no,
it's a
but
rich
just
dessert.
But in the tiramisu.
Okay. So then you do a custard base then, because you can make it with some egg yolks, a little bit of sugar, some milk and cream,
just
and I can
exactly
send you the recipe for this
recipe,
and you can make it ahead.
Brilliant.
Yeah,
brilliant.
Exactly.
Solved, Mary Carr.
Listen, thank you so
well
much.
Done, Mary.
There's three of us here, all big fans of tiramisu. It's my favourite dessert, tiramisu.
Is it, Ray?
Yeah.
Good man.
Oh, it's delicious, isn't it? Yeah,
I love it.
And there's the coffee in as well, so it gives you a little bit of a kick. Okay, Kathleen, how are you doing, Kathleen? Thanks very much, Mary. How are you doing, Kathleen?
Thanks, Mary.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
It's all Tipperary today. You're in Clonmel.
I'm Clonmel, just outside Clonmel, yeah.
Right. Now, your question is about Christmas pudding.
Yes. I've been using the same recipe for over 40 years for my Christmas pudding, and it's always lovely. But this year, I'm hoping to do it in the use the same recipe, but do it in the slow cooker. Would that work?
Yeah, that would work. Absolutely so it would, Kathleen. It'd work fine, so it might take a little bit longer because normally when I do it, me and Ray were talking about it last week, we put it in the oven in a tray. It's called a bain-marie, so you half fill the tray with water so your kitchen's not full with steam. So
yeah.
A lot of slow cookers, I think you'd want to put a little bit of water in it just to keep it nice and that it doesn't kind of melt or go dry or anything like that. So keep it topped up with boiling water. But the slow cooker, I mean, like you're probably the second or third person that asked me that, Kathleen. Can you do in a slow cooker, something I haven't done, but I know it would work. And just once it comes out with the skewer in the middle, it could take, you know, 6 to 8 hours. And once the skewer comes out kind of clean, that it's no way raw in the centre, it should be absolutely fine and keep it topped up with water. Yeah.
Great. Yeah, it'd be much easier. Yeah. Okay.
I forgot to say to Mary that she gets a copy of your Christmas book, Nevin, but Kathleen, you do as well. What are the plans for Christmas, Kathleen?
My plans, well, it's just usual. I'm hoping that my daughter will get home. She lives in West Cork, so
right,
not too far. So once the restrictions are lifted, we hope she'll be up. And actually, her favourite is the Christmas pudding, so I have to have it right.
You better have it right. Well, they're saying they're probably going to relax the inter-county restrictions for Christmas.
Yes, so hopefully, yeah.
That'd be great. Yeah, yeah. So you'll have her there and she'll enjoy your Christmas pudding cooked in a slow cooker. Successfully,
hope so.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sounds great.
Yeah.
Kathleen, let us know how you get on because you could have started a trend.
Yeah, okay, I'll do that, Nevin.
See
okay,
good
thank
woman.
You, Nevin.
See you, Kathleen.
Bye, Kathleen.
Bye. Now, just quick for, please ask Nevin if I need to feed a Christmas pudding with brandy or do I leave it alone?
No, we don't. I mean, like, once you do it, keep it really moist, keep it well wrapped. It should be absolutely no need to. You feed the cake, as me and you were talking about last week.
Yes,
so the cake is
you
more
don't
important.
Do it the pudding, yeah. Would you thank Nevin? In 2010, my mum and dad and I visited Black Lion. The food was gorgeous, but what stood out to me was how kind Nevin was to my mum. Nevin, you made her day, and it's a great memory to have. So obviously,
wow.
Brenda has lost her mum since.
That's lovely. Ah, bless.
I'm presuming that. Maybe I'm wrong. I shouldn't have said it. We met Nevin and his wife and doggies down in Fairview Hotel in Killarney this summer. During our staycation, lovely, friendly people and genuinely sound. That's Adele, Colm and Bailey. Will you ask Nevin, can he come and make my Christmas dinner?
I'll send her a book, tell her. Gonna come. Who asked that?
That's Francis in Galway. That's her question for you. Now, we've 2 minutes, Nevin, to talk about. I was saying that you're coming on to talk about food gifts. So
yes, yeah, so,
and we've all the recipes up on our website there.
Exactly.
So the three things,
so
or
we'll
four
very
things
quickly
you suggest.
Go through,
yeah,
so we will. Exactly. So chocolate truffles. I hear you make amazing chocolate truffles. The key is really good chocolate, and it's really just boiling some cream, whisking your chocolate, a little bit of butter, and then that nice liqueur, Cool Swan liqueur. If you don't want alcohol in them, for your children, a little bit of grated orange, vanilla extract will work perfect. These can be made ahead. They'll keep for at least a month in your fridge. They probably won't last that long, and they're a lovely homemade gift in a Kindler jar.
Yes.
And what you do is you make them the night before, you shape them with a little melon baller, and then you roll them in melted chocolate and cocoa powder. Chocolate Mendians, they're called. That's just melted chocolate with different nuts, dried cranberries, that kind of thing. They're a lovely little homemade gift. And you know, if you're full after the Christmas dinner, they're lovely with a cup of coffee. Yeah. They're absolutely gorgeous and they look really well. So you can use the white chocolate, the
and
dark,
Evan,
and the milk.
You can buy little boxes, little presentation boxes online, can't you?
And absolutely. I mean, like, and even the Kindler jar, Ray, and I'll tell you why, because the Kindler jar is airtight. So with the next recipe that I'm going to talk to you very, very quickly about is the cranberry oat cookies. These are lovely cookies. So you have butter, sugar, one egg, a little bit of vanilla, some lovely porridge oats. We use some Flavin's porridge oats. And then we put dried cranberries, self-raisin flour, and a little bit of cinnamon. So this is a recipe that the kids can make for their friends and family and that. And they're lovely with cheese if you leave out the sugar. So the recipe, obviously, you know, is on your website. But this is a lovely gift. They'll keep in the fridge for up to 3 to 4 weeks, you know, and then you can bake them, you know, from raw, and they'll keep again another 2 weeks in an airtight container. So they're a lovely gift to serve with cheese. I've also given you a grape chutney, which is really, really good with cheese. And that's just using some grapes, apple, a little bit of balsamic, a little bit of onion. There's mixed spice in that cinnamon, all those lovely, gorgeous Christmas kind of smells and flavours, yeah. A little bit of brown sugar, and it just all goes into the pot. And then when you cook it, you put it into a Kindler jar again and just give it to your family and friends. And it's a lovely gift for like leftover, you know, for the ultimate kind of like ham sandwich or else a cheese board. It is absolutely gorgeous and it keeps
that's
really
well. That's the grape chutney and cranberry sauce. We're going to put that up there as well, which is so easy. It's ridiculously easy to make, isn't it?
Do you know what? It's gorgeous and it can be made ahead and kept in the fridge, and I put a little bit of orange zest, just get fresh or frozen cranberries, fresh now will be in the supermarket soon, a little bit of apple juice, a little bit of orange rind, cinnamon stick is gorgeous. Okay. And because they're so tart, you will need some sugar in that, and they're delicious. Okay. So they are.
Brenda's been back on. Her mum passed away in 2013 and gave her mum an autograph book, which she cherishes.
Wow.
Nevin, we'll talk to you next Tuesday. Mind yourself.
Thanks,
have a good week. Bye.
Look
bye.
Yourself. God bless. Bye.
That's it from us. Cormac and Sarah are on the way. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday evening.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Wash your hands.